Writer Elmore Leonard had a loyal cult following before he hit it big in 1985 with his 23rd novel, Glitz. That became a bestseller. Bandits, another hit, followed last year. Leonard first wrote Western short stories and novels, two of which, Ombre and 310 to Yuma, were made into movies. But he's best known for writing crime fiction. His new book, Touch, is neither a Western nor a crime novel. Actually, Touch was written 10 years ago, but it languished in a publisher's office until Leonard brought the rights back and took it to another company. Touch takes place in Detroit, Leonard's hometown, and the scene for many of his crime stories. Touch is the story of an ex-seminarian named Juvenal who has mystical healing powers. Each time he performs a healing miracle, he bleeds from stigmata.
The character probably came out of the first movie I ever wrote in 1960 when I was still working at an ad agency. On the side, I did a Franciscan brother recruiter for a friend of mine who was producing it for the Franciscans in Chicago, I think it was. That probably influenced me to some extent. I think also the word stigmata that had been in my educational experience with a Catholic education, having the nuns telling us about stigmata, miracles, I think all of that seemed to come together at that time.
Sounds like you even like the sound of the word stigmata.
Yeah. Oh, sure, that's it. I'm sure the way it started.
Did something happen in your life at around that time that led you to write about someone who had a spiritual gift and someone who was uncorruptible?
No, not really. Although it was about that time that I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and there are scenes in the book in an alcohol rehabilitation center. And I did go to one for research.
Well, you wrote Touch the year you gave up drinking, and I think that people who drink or smoke usually think that they'll never write another word without cigarettes or alcohol. Was it a hard year to write?
No. Once I gave up alcohol, there was no problem at all. It's been 10 years, and I haven't had any desire since. I did give up smoking, and I remember that I gave it up for 70 days, and in that 70-day period, I wrote 35 pages. So I started smoking again, and the next 70 days, I did about 250.
Are you smoking now?
Yeah, because I'm starting another book. That's my excuse.
It seems that you used to live something of a double life. You had a job writing advertising copy, but you also were a novelist, and you started your career as a novelist writing Western novels. Did you have any first-hand encounters with the Western kind of life, or did you just like the genre a lot?
I liked Western movies, and that's the reason I picked Westerns as a genre within which to learn how to write. It could have been crime, but a genre with a good market, which Westerns had, that for magazine fiction you could aim at slick magazines, Saturday Evening Post and Collier's, and come down then through Argosy, Adventure, Blue Book, and about a dozen different pulp titles that were still being published then.
Did the genre dry up for novelists at the same time that Western started to disappear from movies and television?
It was because of television that the market dried up for books, and I think it was TV that put the pulp magazines out of business.
Why did you move to crime novels after you gave up Western novels?
Because I would feel more secure within a genre, I suppose, and also because there's a market, and also because then it kind of narrows your sights down in selecting, in thinking up a story. I don't know why. In the beginning, I had trouble thinking of stories, thinking up situations, and now I see them all around me. I see them all the time. But I didn't get into my approach to writing crime fiction really isn't from a traditional angle. I didn't come out of the tradition of Chandler and Hammett, the private eye tradition. I approached it more from what's going on today, what's going on in the street.
Did you feel any affinity with the thieves and cons that you write about?
No, I don't feel any affinity with them as thieves or cons, but I do with them as human beings. It's the man who commits a criminal act in a 10-minute period in holding up a liquor store, let's say. Well, all the rest of the day, he's not committing criminal acts. He's trying to decide what he's going to have for breakfast when he gets up, what he's going to wear when he pulls the hold up. He sneezes and he coughs and he wonders if he should write to his mother. And he could very possibly behave like all of us.
Your novels really have a very realistic sense about them. It seems like you must have had to get close to the kinds of characters that you write about in order to really understand them and describe how they speak.
No, not really. It's made up. It's fiction. I listen to the rhythm of speech more than I do words. I don't think there'll be, in any given book, there are more than a half a dozen lines, or say a dozen lines in the whole book, that I actually heard someone say. It's all made up. But it's put within the rhythm of the way I hear people speak.
The way you were describing your use of dialogue, where you said the rhythm is really more important to you than the words almost, do you think of everybody as having a certain music to their speech? Is that what you're going after?
Well, some people more than others, of course.
Right.
I think less educated people with the more interesting way of talking, street people with a considerably more interesting way of talking than educated people, with more slang expressions, more strange idioms.
I'm just curious, you started your career in advertising writing?
Right.
Do you remember any of the campaigns that you wrote or any of the lines you came up with?
I wrote a lot of Chevrolet truck ads. I wrote passenger car ads, too. It was all print.
Can you remember a slogan?
I'm trying to think of one. No, I can't. And I was in the wrong business because I should never have been sitting there trying to think of slogans. And the type of writing at that time in the 50s, in the late 50s, for the passenger car, anyway, it was kind of a cute style. They wanted you to employ kind of with alliteration and similes and metaphors and things like that, which I've never been much good at.
Do you read ad copy now to see what people are up to?
No, I don't. Although it's funny, my son, who has an advertising agency, my oldest son, asked me if I would help him out last week. There's a chance to use all the adverbs and adjectives that I never use in my prose, see?
You really have weeded your prose of a lot of adjectives and adverbs.
Oh, yeah, I don't believe in them.
No. Why not?
Well, they just stop. They get in the way. They mess up the rhythm, and they're no good.
In a way, you like to have the characters speak for themselves.
Oh, that's the whole idea. The character, I decide before I write a scene from whose point of view the scene should be written, what the purpose of the scene is, and then let's see what happens. It's point of view is everything to me. It's what keeps me down in the story, within a character that I don't know any more than that character does. The omniscient author who's sitting up above looking at it all, he knows what everybody's thinking. And sometimes he'll change points of view, or too often he'll change points of view in the middle of a scene, and it just thins it out. He's telling too much at once, or it starts to fall apart. It doesn't retain the intensity that you can have by maintaining a single point of view.
Well, Elmore Leonard, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your writing.
Well, thank you.
Elmore Leonard's new book is titled Touch.